All right, we'll say good morning. Let's begin. A lot to do today. Today's daf is Kuf Hey 105. We are picking up on Kuf Dalet Amud Bey. Kuf Dalet Amud Bey is 104B. And let's pick up. I believe we left off with Bayer Rebbe Lazar. Is that correct? 6, 8, 9, about 11 lines up from the bottom. Good. So, Bayer Rebbe Lazar. Lazar asked the following Shaila. Yitzia. Ma shetoil biparim hanisaf musir nesaf. So I'll say, what happens if, remember again, we're on the topic over here about the particular karbanos that are burnt outside of the Beis HaMikdash. We spent a lot of time yesterday speaking about the geography as to where these karbanos are actually burned. So we'll say, so now the Gemara deals with the following shayla. What happens if ultimately, again, the karbanos are taken out before Zrika? This is before the Zrika. So ma shetoil biparim hanisaf musir nesaf. So more simply, by the way, what exactly is the question? If you're taking it out before Zvika, you take it out before Zvika, and what? So more simply, remember, Abba Alibu Deman De Amar Adayim Ohigias Mano Lotzeis. So also remember again. So according to the opinion, who says that it's not yet the right time ultimately to take them out? Mi Arminan Hani Mili Basar Dein Sofa Lotzeis Chova Aval Hani De Sofa Lotzeis Chova Lo. We have a concept that if you go out and you take out a regular carbon outside of the Beis HaMikdash, then it's possible. Now the difference over here, remember, is that that's a carbon, ultimately that's what? That is never supposed to be taken out. These carbonos are supposed to be taken outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So the shayla is, now that I know they're supposed to be taken out, what happens if I take it out at the wrong time? In other words, I took it out too early. So does that impact the carbon or not? So the Gemara says, Tashma, the Tani Levi, She'ira bo psul b'yitziyaso. Remember again, we spoke about this brisa yesterday, that if, let's say again, something happens that invalidates the carbon b'yitziyaso, when it is being taken out. My love, psul yitziya, are you not talking about the fact that maybe you took the carbon out, or we'll say when? Prior to Zrika, to which the Gemara says, Lo, psul tuma psulino. No, that's not what it means. Rather, it's referring ultimately again to the psul of tuma, if it becomes tame, or lino, like we spoke about yesterday, it's left overnight. Bayer Rebbe Lazar, so we'll say, therefore, the Gemara does not resolve that particular shayla. Bayer Rebbe Lazar, Parim HaNasrafim, Sir HaNasrafim. What happens was in the following situation? Parim HaNasrafim, Sir HaNasrafim, which are again, are there kabaros that are totally burnt on the outside? Sheyatza rubo b'miot eiver. This is actually interesting halacha. So remember again, what happens if the majority of the animal is taken outside of the Beis HaMikdash, b'miot eiver, but the 51st percent, we'll call it the majority, is represented by the minority of one particular limb. So the idea over here is 51% of the animal has now exited the Yushalayim. But what happens? That 51%, that last piece of majority, is made up of the minority of one of the limbs of the animal. So the Gemara says, here we go. So mahu, what's the halacha? Hach mi'uto de'ever basa ruba shadin alei? Do we say that minority of the limb follows after the majority of the animal, and therefore again, we view it as if the majority of the animal has exited? So the Gemara says, so mahu, hach mi'uto de'ever basa ruba shadin alei? Vaha lo nafkalei? O dilma basa ruba dine? I'm sorry, do we say, that little minority of the limb follows what? The rest of its limb. And therefore, again, since the rest of that limb has not exited Yerushalayim, therefore what? Therefore, the minority of the limb is considered to be inside as well, which of course means de facto what's occurred. The majority of the animal has not left Yerushalayim. O Dilma, or perhaps we say, Basiru Behemoth Shadinon. Or maybe we say, no, we look at the minority of the limb not as part of the whole limb, but rather as what? But rather as part, as attached to the animal. And therefore we'll say, again, in this particular case, therefore, halacha lemaisa what? Halacha lemaisa, we view it after the majority of the animal, and therefore halacha lemaisa, the majority of the animal has exited. So the Gemara says, pshita, delo shafkinan ruba debehema, vazlinan basa ruba devarm. We'll say, so it's clear that we are not going to forsake looking at the majority of the animal in order to start measuring the majority of the limbs. Ella, so also in other words, it doesn't make sense to say that we would look at the minority of that limb and look at it as part of the whole limb. We look at it as part of the animal. Ella, shiyatza chetziyav berov eiver. Hi, Sulimar says, I'm sorry. Ella, shiyatza chetziyav berov eiver. What's the case? The case is where half of the animal ultimately, again, has gone out. But half of the animal ultimately is comprised of what? Berov Eva, of the majority of one limb. In other words, I will say that half that went out is made up ultimately, again, of one limb. So the Gemara says, the Rov of one limb. Haimi Uta de Eva, top of Kofay. Haimi Uta de Eva, Basa Rov Eva Shadin Alei. Do we say that ultimately, again, the miot of the one aver goes after the majority of its aver, v'harnafikle, and therefore we view the animal as if it went out, odilma basar behema shadinale? Or we'll say, maybe we say that what? Maybe we say that that piece of the limb is considered to be an extension of the animal as a whole, to which the Gemara says, teku. So we'll say the Gemara leaves this question unresolved. Rabba rafuna masnila begavri b'misaskinbo. So we'll say, Rabba rafuna phrased the same type of question, but in his model, we're not really dealing with whether or not the majority of the limbs of the animal, majority of the animal, but rather what we're focusing on over here, ultimately, is the majority of people carrying the animal. But remember, again, we saw that Halacha Lemaaseh, the Mishnah said that there were four people used to carry out the Parma Nesrafim and Sirim HaNesrafim. So here we go. So the Gemara says, Chamisha, Misaskibo, Chamisha B'nei Adam. Let's say, again, we'll see you have a case of where, although you only need four, let's say you had five people carrying the carbon. V'nafku tlasa, three of them went out. Upashalahu trei, and two were left inside. So three exited Yerushalayim, two were left inside Yerushalayim. So my, we'll say, so what is the halacha? Basa rov, misaskin azlina, do we go after the majority of people carrying the animal? And therefore, again, Rabbi say, therefore we would view the animal as if it's outside. And Rabbi say, now according to that logic, if you go after, this question actually carries a lot more weight. Because if you go basa misaskin, Rabbi say, then what does that mean? That means even the people who have not yet left Yerushalayim would be considered as if what? They did leave. And if they're considered as if they did leave, then what? Then they are tmeim. Remember, again, at least according to the opinion of the Mishnah, so those who are involved in the Parma Nesrafim, in the moment you leave Yerushalayim, you are tamei. So what's this? So the shaila over here is if you have five guys carrying the carbon, three of them exit Yerushalayim, two of them are still inside the city. So the shaila becomes, do we view the two as if they are nigrar, pulled after the three, the rov, and therefore they are tamei, even though they didn't exit the city, or not? So my basa rov mas askin azlinon, Bosei, do we go after, ultimately, again, the majority of the people involved in carrying the carbon? Or do we go, Baser Behema, do we look, go after the animal? To which the Gemara says, Teku. Gemara again leaves this question unresolved as well. By Rabbi Lazar, Parim Usu'irim Hanisrafim Shiyatsu V'chazru Ma'ar. Bosei, so now another very interesting case. What happens if you took out the par or the seer, and then what? And then you brought it back inside the Beis HaMikdash. Now look at Rashi for just a moment. It's almost right across in Rashi. Shiyatsu v'chazru mahu, kasak adaitcha le'inyun tumas bigodim shal'ilu shotziyah kami b'ayis. We'll say, so the shaila over here is, you took the carbon out, and then you brought it back in. Now obviously the case that we're dealing with over here is, you brought it back in without having done the avodah. So you took it out, and then for some reason you turn around and you come back inside. So we'll say, so the shaila is, the Rashi says, the assumption right now we're asking is there tumah as a result of the departure from Yerushalayim, even though what? You did not actually do the avoda of the carbon. Do we say once you leave Yerushalayim, by definition, the tumah devolves upon the individual? Or do we say, no, once you came back without doing the avoda, you're back. Amrav Abar Mamel. So what's Rav Abar Mamel said as follows. Tashma, hayu sovlin oso bimotos. So remember again, the halacha was that they would carry the carbon with staffs, right? The carbon would be on long poles, I should say. Long poles. They would carry the carbon on poles. Harishonim yatzu chotz l'chomas ha'azara, when the first two guys would leave the walls of Yerushalayim, or I should say in this case of the Azara, v'achrorim lo yatzu, but the last second ones did not yet leave. Harishonim shiyatzu chotz l'chomas ha'azara, mitamin begadim. So I'll say ultimately again, the ones who left Yerushalayim would become tamei tumas begadim, v'achronim ein mitamin begadim ad shiyetzu. And the other ones, I will say, ultimately again, who remained inside. So the halacha was they would not be mitamei their begadim until they went in. They went outside. V'sakadaitchan. I will say now this is actually, and Rashi points out that this is a little bit of a stretch in terms of the Gemara's raya, but we'll go through nevertheless. V'sakadaitchan kevan dinafkilu hu itmu. I will say now if you assume that the moment they leave Yerushalayim, they become tamei. Even if what? Even if they subsequently come back in, hanoch di'ika gavoi litma, then ultimately, again, even those who are still on the inside, ultimately what? Should become tamei as us. So the Gemara's havamina over here is, if you say that it's just automatic departure from Yerushalayim that makes you tamei, whether you come back or not, so then by definition what the Gemara is suggesting over here is that once the process of departure has begun, and the first two are on the outside, then the Gemara said the last two should become tamei as well. The fact that they don't indicates to us what? That if you're in the city or if you come back to the city, ultimately, again, you should not become tummy. Now, when you say come back to the city, what that means is come back to the city without what? Without having done the actual avoda. So, Rabina v'tizbura. So, Rabina says, no. I'll tell you why that doesn't make sense. Haba'ina v'achar yavo ala machane v'leka. So, I'll say, here's the difference. Everyone's going to agree. Well, I shouldn't say everyone, but let's assume for now, everyone, for our purpose of our discussion, is going to agree that if they didn't yet leave Yerushalayim, then of course they're not going to become Tameh. Right? They're not going to become Tameh. Why not? Because even the Lashon of the Pasuk itself is, V'asoreif osei chabeis v'gadav rachatzav espesura b'mayim, V'acharechen yavo el ha-machaneh. So V'acharechen yavo el ha-machaneh means what? It means that halacha l'maisa, you were outside, and now you're coming back on the inside. So everyone's going to agree that if you haven't yet left Yerushalayim, then of course you can't be tamei. The shayla is, once you're out, even if the avoda was not done, does that satisfy the criteria of v'acharechein yavoi l'machaneh? And maybe you should become tamei even if the avoda was not done. Ela amar ela Rabbi Elazar hechi boila. So what's excuse me? So rather, what was Rabbi Elazar actually asking about? Which the Gemara says kigon dinakiti le bibakulsi. So we'll say, ultimately, and we're already talking about, so we'll say, bakulsi literally are long, crooked poles. If you look at Rashi for just a moment, Rashi says, bakulsi, sha'achsam, dinaki kidli bakulsi, sha'achsam b'maklos, v'omdi michotz lahotziyam la'acha shechazu. So we'll say, so the key so here is as follows. The way you have it is like this. Four people took the karbanos out and then came back in. Brought it back into the Azara. Then what happens? Another set of people will say, come along. Sha'achsim b'maklos. They go in and they take hold of the carbon with poles, with poles. Va'omdim mibachutz. They're standing outside of the Beis HaMikdash. Lo tziyam la'achar shechazu. After the carbon was already brought back. V'kamim b'yilei. Mi arminan kevan sheyatzu chutz la'azara. Kol asrukim b'han mikan ve'ele chutz la'azara metamin b'gadim. Odilma kevan dehadar. So the fundamental shaila over here is, again, what happens if you have a situation where it was brought back in, and now others want to take it back out? So ultimately, again, do we say that once it was brought back out, it's by definition metame, everyone who is going to be involved in it? Or do we say, no, tumah only devolves upon individuals, ultimately, who are going to be involved in the actual avoda? But if no avoda was done, then halacha l'maisa, the tumah doesn't devolve upon the individuals as well. So turn it upon us. We'll say, so again, the Gemara does not seem to resolve that. We're gonna find some type of resolution for all of these cases. Turn it upon us. Parim upara. So we'll say, now the Gemara, Bryce brings a list over here. Parim represents the Parim HaNesrafim. Para is paraduma. Sira Mishtaleach is the Sira of Yom Kippur that is pushed off the glyph. Sira Mishtaleach, so we'll say the halacha is Hamishaleach Hasurfan Valmotziyam Etamin Begadim. So we'll say in all of these cases, remember the common denominator over here is that Paramanas Rafim, Para Aduma, Sira Mishtaleach are all karbonos which are offered outside of the Beis HaMikdash. When I say offered, I use that term a little bit loosely, because they're not actually put on a mizbeach, but rather, again, their avoda is done outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So the Braisa says, anyone who is involved with these karbanos, for example, the mishaleach, the one who goes ahead and sends it off the cliff, sarfan, the one who goes ahead and burns it, motzian, the one who bring them out of Yerushalayim, the halacha is mitame begadim, ultimately, again, their clothing becomes tame, vehein atzman, ein mitamin begadim. But ultimately, again, they themselves, ultimately, again, the hinatzman in metamin begadim. So we'll say the halacha is that their clothing becomes tameh, but they themselves cannot convey tumah to clothing. Look at Rashi. Vehin einon metamin begadim. We'll say it's the first white line in Rashi. Para uparim atzman ein metamin begadim hanogin bahen b'lom is askin. So we'll say, meaning what the Gemara is saying is as follows: an interesting halacha. If you are involved in any of these karbanos, so by definition, your clothing becomes tameh. But if clothing were to touch one of these sacrificial items, then what? It would not become tamei. So it's interesting, again, if you're involved in the avoda, your clothing becomes tamei. But if your clothing, if let's say I'm not involved in the avoda, but my suit rubs against the para aduma, the halacha is my suit, my clothing does not become tamei. Rashi says, avametamin ochlin. So just finish that. Rashi says, avametamin ochlin umashkin hanokin ban. But we will see that food and drink which come in contact with the carcass, with the carbon, ultimately, again, does become tamei. So again, we'll say, so therefore, anyone who's involved in these things, so mitamei begadim, your clothing becomes tamei if you're involved in the avoda, v'in atzman imitamei begadim, but they themselves do not convey tuma to begadim upon contact. Aval mitamei ochlin u'mashkin d'raymer. Raymer says, but we'll say, ochlin and mashkin, food and drink, which touch any of these karbanos, ultimately, again, will become tamei. The chachamim say, para u'para mitamei ochlin u'mashkin. The Chachamim say no. It's only the Paraduma and the Parim, which are Metame Ochlin Umashkin. Si'ir HaMishtaleach Eino Metame. But ultimately, again, the Si'ir HaMishtaleach will not convey to him. Why not? Shuchai. Because we'll say it's alive. V'achai Eino Metame Ochlin Umashkin. And ultimately, something that is alive cannot convey to Ochlin and Mashkin. So Bishlam of the Rabbi Meir. So we'll say, I understand the position of Rabbi Meir. Kid Detana de Rabbi Shmuel. We'll say, so Rabbi Meir's shita is in accordance with Rabbi Shmuel. What's the Rabbi Shmuel say? Detana de Rabbi Shmuel, because they talk to each Rabbi Shmuel. Al kol zera zerua. So we'll say this is actually the pasuk by Kabbalah's Tuma. So the pasuk says, v'chiyipom in nevlasam al kol zera zerua ashe yizara tarhu. So we'll say this is talking about if an animal carcass comes upon something that is mechubar lekarka, attached to the ground. So I say, so the halacha is that something that is attached to the ground cannot be makabel tumah. So therefore, the Gemara says as follows: Mazroim. So this is Tanad Rabbi Shmuel's drasha. Mazroim shein sof only tumah, tumah chamura. So we'll say zroim, seeds themselves, which can never become tamei tumah chamura. And we'll say, now what does it mean? They can't become tamei tumah chamura. So we'll say, for example, they can't become an avatumah. Seeds can never become, even if they become tamei, can never become a high level of tumah, like avatumah. So mazraim shein sof only tamei tumah chamura utzrichin hechsher, and I will say they require hechsher. Hechsher also means what? That in order for seeds to become tamei, they must first come in contact with a liquid medium. It's only if they come in contact with one of the seven liquids that then they are hechsher. They are receptive to tumah. So the Gemara says, af, so therefore again, we draw a principle from here. Af kol shein sof on litamei tuma chamura, tzrichin hechsher. Therefore, I will say, any item which ultimately, again, can't become an avatuma, also requires hechsher in order to become tamei. Also requires contact with a liquid in order to make it tuma receptive. What does this come to exclude? Yotzis sa nevelas of tahor. But I'll say this comes to exclude the carcass of a kosher bird, shesofa litamei tuma chamura, because we will say this indeed can become an avatoma, and therefore what? Ve'in tzricha hechsher. And therefore we will say ultimately again, does not require any type of contact with a liquid medium in order to go out and make it. So we'll say, so first of all, just interesting, Tanya Rabbi Shlomo says, giving us a klal by tuma, that only an item that can't become an avatoma ultimately, again, requires hechsher. If it can't become an If an item can become an avatuma, so therefore it does not require hechsher in order to be mekabel tuma. If an item can't become an avatuma, then by definition it requires hechsher in order to become an avatuma. Which I will say, actually, if you think about it, makes not that tuma Torah doesn't always follow like a logical sequence, but I will say actually makes sense. What it's saying is hechsher means that the item has to be made receptive to tuma. What the Gemara, what Tanya Rabbi Shmuel essentially is saying is, if something is so sensitive to tumah that it can become an avatumah, then by definition it doesn't require hechsher. If it's a bit more insensitive, or I should say, tumah resistant, that it can't become an av, then by definition it requires hechsher. So the Gemara says as follows. So where does this come to exclude? The case of oftar, nevelas oftar, because the nevela oftar, we'll say, has the ability to become an avatumah, therefore doesn't require hechsher. So we'll say, using this same logic, Rabbi Meir would say, that what? That the se'ir la'azazel also has the ability to be matami something. Why? Because the seer, like the nevelas of tahar, also has the ability to become an avatuma, primary source of tuma. Therefore, again, it shouldn't require hechsher in order to become tame, and therefore, what Rabbi say, it should convey ultimately tuma through contact. Elul Rabbanon, according to the Rabbanon, I is lehu the time of Rabbi Shmuel. So if they hold like the time of Rabbi Shmuel, afilu siyam mishtaleach, then even the siyam mishtaleach should convey tuma. Ilesley, if they don't hold of this, afilu para upara minalan. Then I will say that even by para upara, by the para duma and by the para manasrafim, from where do you know that they convey tuma? To which the Imara says, ki asur avdini amar armaro, the Sidon Eretz Yisrael, suichin hechsher tuma mimakom acher. They will say, ultimately, again, what are we talking about? We're talking about items, Rabbi Osai, that require a hechsher tuma from somewhere else. Not items that themselves could be, that, see, Rabbi Osai, essentially what he's saying is like this. When we talk about hechsher tuma, we're talking about the fact that in order for an item to become receptive to tuma, it requires some type of tuma, some type of external tuma preparatory process. The simplest example of that is contact with a liquid. Contact with a liquid ultimately, again, makes something receptive to tuma. Therefore, the Rabbanon will say, what's the list that we're talking about over here of items that require hechsher tuma makom acher, of items that ultimately, again, require tuma preparation external to themselves. But these items, like siyirah, like parim, and like siyirah hanisrafim, ultimately, again, I will say, can become tuma and don't require any external preparation to be makabel tuma. Fine. By Rabbi Lazar, parim with siyirah hanisrafim, Mao shiyitmu u ochlin u mashkim bifnim kibachutz. Supposed to listen to this. So what about the following situation? Do parim and sirim hanisrafim. So we'll say these again are the korbanos that are burnt outside of the Beis HaMikdash. So ultimately again, are they metame ochlin u mashkin bifnim kibachutz? So we'll say, are they metame, can they convey tuma? Ultimately again, to tuma, to ochlin u mashkin, to food and to drink, bifnim kibachutz, inside the Beis HaMikdash, like they would do outside of it. So we already established that outside the Beis HaMikdash, ultimately what happens, once these items are taken out, they have the ability to convey tuma. So remember again, let's go back to this. When it comes to parim and siyum hanasrafim, so what's their tuma capacity? If you're involved with them, then what? Then what? They make your clothing tame. If you're not involved, then they don't convey tuma, meaning if your clothing just touches it, they don't convey tuma to your begadim. But they will convey tuma to what? To ochlin and to mashkin. The shaila now that Gemara is trying to declare is, do they convey tuma to ochlin and mashkin only outside of Yerushalayim, or can they convey tuma to ochlin and mashkin even when they're inside the Beis HaMikdash? Mechusr yitzia, ki mechusr ma'isa dami olo. Do we say about the fact that they have not yet been brought outside of Yerushalayim? Is that like there's something deficient in the sacrificial process or not? Now, if you say there's something deficient in the sacrificial process because they haven't been brought out, then what? Then Allah says they shouldn't convey tuma. If you hold on the other hand that the fact that they haven't been brought out does not make them sacrificially deficient, then ultimately they can convey tuma to Ochlin and Mashkin even inside of the Beis HaMikdash. So Basar Debaya Hader Pashto. After he asked the question, he answered it. Mechusr Yitzia. No, they will say the lacking, or I should say, the fact that the carbon has not yet been taken out is the equivalent of the carbon itself being sacrificially deficient, and therefore halacha lemais, again, it will not convey to one. I will say, this actually seems to be a conclusion that everyone agrees on. Then as much as we said before, that the parim hanisrafim and siyum hanisrafim, when they're taken outside of the Beis HaMikdash, have the ability to convey tuma to the clothing of those who are engaged in it, have the ability to convey tuma to ochlin u'mashkin that just touch it. That ability to convey tuma is limited to when? To when the carbon is taken, bless you, carbon is taken outside of the Beis or outside of Yerushalayim. If it's still inside of the Beis HaMikdash, inside Yerushalayim, it does not convey tuma. And that seems to be halacha l'maisa. Bayi minei rab abba bar shmua mi rab chiyah bar abba. The velas oftar, supposed to listen to this. So if you have the carcass of a kosher bird, the velas oftar, the Rabbi Meir, mahu sheyitma. Sheyitma b'kizayis. So we'll say, listen to this. According to Rabbi Meir, what happens if you have a kizayis of an velas oftmea? Does, oftar, excuse me, you have the carcass of a kosher bird. So we'll remember again. So does that have the ability to convey tuma to other food items through a kizayis? Let me say it a little bit better in English. If you have a kizayis of an avelas oftar, you have a kizayis of a carcass of a kosher bird, does that kizayis have the ability to convey tuma to other food items or not? To which the Gemara says, Well, what's the case? Look at Rashi for just a moment. Maushi, it's about five lines up from the bottom. L'Rabbi Meir, Ochlin u'mashkin b'kizayis, L'Rabbanon lo tibaylach, D'amri midi d'chazi l'tuma, ba'inon. U'b'kizayis ein zulutuma, ela b'beis abliya. Aval in maga lekashir b'kizayis, ela remeir d'amri kosher sofa l'tama y'tuma chamura. Fine, so we'll see this later on. So we'll say, so what's the case? What's the case? To which the Gemara says, "D'machta la'ara lo tibaylacha." So we'll say, if the kizayis of the of tame is sitting on the ground and a food item touches it, then we'll say that's not a shaila. Why? We'll say because remember, again, we know we already learned this. And interestingly enough, nevelas of tar only conveys tuma how the beis habliya only when you swallow it. Right? This is an interesting halacha about nevelas of tar. It conveys tuma to your clothing as a result of swallowing. So if it's sitting on the ground, it doesn't convey tumah to anyone or anything. So the Gemara says, what's the case? Dinakit bipume lo tibaylecha. If you have it in your mouth, obviously, again, that's not a shayla either. Why? Because it certainly conveys tumah under those circumstances. So kiti baylecha, so I'll say, so what is the shayla? Dinakit lebiadei. We'll say, well, what happens if I'm holding a kizayis of nevelas of tahar in my hand? So what's the shayla? Mechusar kreva ka mechusar maisa dami olo. We'll say, so what's missing over here? When I'm holding that kizayis of nevelas of tahar in my hand, what's missing, Abba Osai? What's missing is the moving it, the bringing it close to my mouth, the putting it in my mouth. So do we view that what we call, what Gemara calls mechusar kreva, the absence of bringing it closer, ki mechusar maisa, as if there is a sacrificial detail that is missing, olo, or not? To which the Gemara says, basa debaya hadar pashta, so the Gemara answers it, amud beis, The Gemara answers that no, the mechusar kreva, the fact that it is lacking, the being brought close to my mouth, is not the equivalent, ultimately, again, of the lacking of a sacrificial maisa. And therefore, we'll say the Gemara suggests that in this case, where it's holding it, ultimately, again, it would convey tuma to ochlin and mashkin. So the Gemara says, Eisve, the Gemara is the kasha. So Eisve, the Gemara is the kasha. Shlosha asa dvar nemru b'nevelas oftar. There were 13 different concepts that were said when it comes to a nevelas oftar. V'zeh echa mehem. And I will say one of them was as follows. Or it really is something more than one of these you're going to see. Machshava, number one, that ultimately, again, in order for a nevelas oftar to convey tuma, there has to be machshava. I will say, now what is machshava? Machshava ultimately means that I have kavana to eat it. I have kavana for food item. Look at Rashi. Tzuicha machshava. Actually, we're going to see that kizayis. And remember again, we'll just keep in mind right now, Rabbi Meir Shail is dealing with kizayis, not with kibetz, as we'll see in just a moment. So number one, it requires machshava. Next, vein tzvicha hechsher. So we'll say again, as we said before, kizayis oftar. Kizayis nevelas oftar does not require hechsher. We'll say, why not? Why not? You saw this before, why not? Because halacha lemaisa, remember, anything that has the ability to become an avat, we'll call it av. Tuma chamura, ultimately, again, does not require hechsher. Next, umetami tumas ochlin kibetza. And ultimately, it has the ability to convey tumas ochlin. But I will say, but watch this. What's the shear? What's the shear? Bechibetza. But I will say, so the shear ultimately is an eggs volume, not a kizayis. Rabbi Meir was suggesting that a kizayis of nevelas of tahar has the ability to convey tumas ochlin. Here the Brisa clearly saying what the Rabbi said, that halacha lamaisa, no, you require ultimately a kibetza. Look at Rashi for just a moment. Umetami tumas ochlin bikibetza, midiktani tzvicha machshava, ve'ina tzvicha hechsher, alma bidinakit lebiadei askim. So we'll say the fact that we say that you require machshava, but you don't require hechsher, we're talking about a case where you're holding the nevelas of tahar in your hand. Di'i mascha ba'ara amai ina tzvicha hechsher. So we'll say, Rashi just points out over here, we must be talking about a case where you're holding the nevelas of tar in your hand. Yet, again, what did the Braisa say? How much of it do you need in order to convey tumah to ochlin and mashkin? A kibetza. So this contradicts what Rabbi Meir said before, because Rabbi Meir said that even a kizayis of nevelas of tahor, has the ability to convey tumah to ochel in a mashkin. Here we see it's a kibetza. My love, Rabbi Meir, does this not reflect the view of Rabbi Meir? And in which case we have a stira, a contradiction. Is it a kizayis or is it a kibetza of nevelas of tahor that ultimately conveys tumah to ochel in a mashkin? To which the Gemara says, no, it's not Rabbi Meir. Lo rabbanon hi. Say, in fact, it's not Rabbi Meir. It is the rabbanon. I v'haka tani reisha tzricha makshava vein tzricha hechsher. But one second, what we learned in the beginning of the braisa, that's what? That this nevelas of tahor requires machshava and doesn't require hechsher. So uman shamis le hai svara. And Abba say, ultimately, again, who was the one who told us this svara? Which svara, Abba say? That if something has the ability to contract or to become tuma chamura, it does not require hechsher. That's Rabbi Meir. Abba say, that's Rabbi Meir. So ultimately, again, you're going to tell me, Omidoresh Rabbi Meir, Sefenari Rabbi Meir. We'll say now again, so the beginning of the Braisa, which espouses the principle that if something is capable of becoming Tumah Chamura, it doesn't require Hechsher, that's Rabbi Meir. So we'll say, if the Resh is Rabbi Meir, then what? Then it makes sense to say that the Sefer is Rabbi Meir also? To which the Gemara says, not necessarily. Midei Iriya, Haki Di Isa, Vahaki Di Isa. Perhaps not, we'll say, perhaps each one is reckoned separately, and each one is reckoned on its own. I was about to say, so both the Reisha and the Sefer, the Reisha could reflect the view of Rabbi Meir, and therefore the principle I will say is the principle, which is that halacha l'maisa, if something is capable of becoming tumah chamura, it does not require hechsher, but the Sefer ultimately could reflect the view of the Rabbanan, namely that what? That nevelas of tahar only conveys tumah to ochlin and mashkin if what? Bikibetza. Bikibetza, to which the Gemara says, Vahamid diktani Sefer. I have what about the end of the braisa that says shchitasa umilikasa mitaheres trefasa mitumasa. So it's actually something we studied extensively earlier before. What about the fact that the seifa of the braisa says that when it comes to a bird, if you go ahead and you shecht it or you do malika mitaheres trefasa mitumasa. Both say, so the act of shchita or malika removes any type of tuma consideration. So we'll say, whose opinion does that reflect? Man shamas le hai svara. We'll say, whose opinion does that reflect? Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir. So we'll say, now we have a real problem. So you're going to tell me, Reisha v'seif Rabbi Meir mitzias Rabbanan. So we'll say, watch this. You have three halachos over here. So halacha number one is that what? Anything that's capable of contracting, of becoming tumah chamura, doesn't require hechsher. You have halacha number two that says, only a kebetza's worth of nevelas of tar conveys tumah to ochlin and mashkin. And now you have halacha number three, which is what? That shchita or malika of an of tar removes any type of tumah from its carcass. So we'll say, here's what I know. One is Rabbi Meir, three is Rabbi Meir, and now you're going to tell me that the middle one, number two, halacha number two, is the Rabbanan. So this is just stylistically, it's a strange way to arrange a Mishnah or a Braisa. Does that make sense? Reisha v'sefer Meir mitzvahs Rabbanan. To which the Gemara says, yes, in. Reisha v'sefer Meir mitzvahs Rabbanan. Yeah. To which the Gemara says, it's an incredible Musar. Incredible Musar is, Chazal, you know, the Gemara always wants things to be streamlined, right? Always wants things to be like in a linear progression. Rabbanan, 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 Rabbi Meir. So therefore, you know, mostly whenever you come across this situation where you have a braisa that reflects multiple opinions, Chazal, the Gemara doesn't like it because the Gemara feels that stylistically it's not the way to go. It's good to go ahead and arrange things in a methodical, linear fashion, to which the Gemara often answers, in Reisha v'seif Rabbi Meir, Mitzvahs Rabbanan, Simosai, it's an incredible metaphor for life. Life rarely goes just in a straight linear fashion. There are peaks and valleys. There are ups and downs. There are bumps. Nothing just goes straight according to plan. So you have Reish Rabbi Meir, Mitzias Rabbanon, Sefer Rabbi Meir, and that's how it goes. Another discussion that is still part of the somewhat part of the previous discussion. So essentially, don't sit down until you explain to me the following halacha. So we'll say, meaning Rav Hamnun and Rabbi Zira see each other, and Rav Hamnun and Rabbi Zira, you know, don't make yourself comfortable until you explain this to me. What does he want him to explain to him? So the Gemara says, Nevelas of Tahar Meir. So we'll listen to this. According to Meir, if you have a Nevelas of Tahar, so we'll remember again, Rabbi Meir is one who holds that Nevelas of Tahar is capable of achieving Tumah Chamura. It's going to have a more Chamur Tumah. It also doesn't require Hechsher. So according to Rabbi Meir, Monin La Rishon V'Sheni, Ein Monin Rishon Mishnah. So this is actually an interesting halacha. So if Nevelas of Tar conveys Tumah to something else, does it make that secondary item a Rishon or a Sheni or not? So also what the Gemara is really asking over here is according to Rabbi Meir, who holds that Nevelas of Tameh, or Nevelas of Tar, excuse me, has the ability to have Tumah Chamura. When it conveys Tumah to something else, what level of Tumah does it convey? Do we look at it as an Av, and therefore it has the ability to go ahead and make something else, ultimately a Rishon or a Sheni, or not? So in other words, Amon Rishon v'Sheni, Amarle, to which Rabbi Zera responded, Kalecha demetame adam b'maga, monin bo Rishon v'Sheni. Ultimately, it says the Gemara, whenever you have an item that conveys Tumah to a person through maga, through contact, that type of Tumah will make something else a Rishon or a Sheni. Kalecha de'en metame adam b'maga, in monin bo rishon v'sheni. We'll say, but in a case where what? In a case where halacha l'maisa, an item, a davarat tumah, will not go ahead and make something a rishon or a sheni, a person a rishon or a sheni through touching it, then ultimately again, excuse me, in a case where an item of tumah does not make someone tame through maga, then ultimately again it doesn't make a rishon or a sheni. We'll say, so how does that answer our question? So remember again, nevelas of tara, we'll say, does it go ahead and make someone tame b'maga through touching it? And the answer is, no. It only conveys Tumah how? The base Habliya, through ultimately swallowing. Therefore, Halacha L'maisa, because it does not convey Tumah through Maga, therefore, even though, according to Rabbi Meir, it is a Tumah Chamura, it will not make something else a Rishon or a Sheni. Next. So Rabbi Zera asked the question of someone. Here we go. Disnan. This is actually a fascinating case. Disnan Chiburi Ochlin Ayedei Mashkin. Chibur l'tumah kala ve'in chibur l'tumah chamura. So let's listen to this. You have the following situation. You look at Rashi actually for just a moment. Chiburei ochlin ayedin mashkin. Look, it's right by the Agos Habach. Rashi says over here, chatzi zayis nevela mikan ve'chatzi zayis nevela mikan u'mashke tofeach be'emtza ve'noge b'shnehem mechabrin l'tame ochlin u'mashkin hanogim be'echam in ha'chatzan elbo. So listen to this. So remember again, let's say nevela. Nevela only conveys tumah if you have a kizayis of it. Supposed to listen to the following case. I have a half a kizayis of nevela on one side, half a kizayis of nevela on the other side, and I have liquid in the middle. And the liquid essentially is in between the two pieces. There's a concept, says the Gemara, of chibur ochlin al yidei mashkin, which is that if you have two half zesim of nevela that have shared liquid in the middle, that shared liquid actually creates a halachic bridge between the two pieces to create what, Rabbosai? A kizayis of nevela. And therefore, again, Rabbosai, if something were, if let's say other food and drink were to come and touch one of those half kizayis pieces of nevela, the food and drink, the ochel nemashkin, would become tamei as if they touched an entire kizayis of nevela. That's called chibur ochlin al yedei mashkin, an incredible halacha. So we'll say, so now, what's the shayla? So that's actually, for our purposes here, an uncontested principle. So that's not the shayla. What's the shayla? So monin bo rishon v'sheni, ben orish v'sheni. We'll say, what type of tumah does it convey? Does it make the item that touched it a rishon or a sheni or not? Amarle, kalecha demetame adam monin bo rishon v'sheni. In metame adam, in monin bo rishon v'sheni. We'll say, to which the Gemara essentially says that halacha l'maisa, whenever an item conveys tumah to a person, again through maga, then ultimately again it will go ahead and make something a rishon or sheni. When it's not matami a person, it doesn't create a rishon or sheni. But say in a case like this, although we say chiburi ochlin ayedei mashkin is chibur l'tumah, that type of tumah ultimately again will not, that type of item will not convey tumah to a person. Because it won't convey tumah to a person through maga, then ultimately it doesn't make a rishon or sheni as well. So we'll say the Gemara says, so look, let's go back there a little bit. So actually, look at Rashi just a moment. Ve'in chibur tumah chamura, letame adam v'kelim. So we'll say, so the Rashi says, the Gemara says over here, that this type of tumah, which is that two half zesim combined by liquid in the middle, will not go ahead and be metame a person. Rashi says it won't be metame a person and kalim. Essentially, we'll say the only thing it conveys tumah to is what? Is what? Is food. Ochlin and mashkin will not convey tumah to people or to clothing. I will say the end of Rashi is amazing. V'tayma lo yadana. Rashi says, by the way, I don't know why. Right? This is just the way that it is. So first of all, so just in such. See, I'm going to tell you something. You know, Rashi didn't have to say that. Rashi didn't have to say, I don't know why. Right? Rashi just has to tell us again what it's referring to. They also say an incredible, incredible lesson. Rashi teaches us sometimes things in so many different ways. So Rashi teaches us over here that sometimes it's also okay, not sometimes, anytime, it's okay to say you don't know. It's okay, like the Imam Masechet Shabbos says, Lamad Lashon Chaloma Eini Yodea, teach your tongue to say I don't know. People are very resistant to say they don't know. Because to say I don't know something, we often interpret as a sign of human frailty or weakness. So what do? More often than not in life, what people do is instead of saying they don't know, what do? They make stuff up. And sometimes I will say, you know, the amazing part is, you can make stuff up to the point that you could even feel convinced yourself. Right? You say it enough times over, you begin to take it as MS. And I will say, this could be a very dangerous thing because people invent all types of contrived truths for themselves that they use to live their lives based on. And sometimes, again, the best thing you could do is to say, the time in Yodea, I don't know. And it's okay not to know. If Rashi doesn't know, there are plenty of things that I don't know also. In those moments, Rabbi Sagan, when we're confronted with our human limitations, that we don't know something, instead of trying to pretend like those limitations don't exist, the better approach is to embrace it, and ultimately, again, to find humility in it. So the Gemara goes a little bit weiter. Rabbi Sagan, we'll just go weiter for two lines. I have to record the parasha thought afterwards. So the Gemara says as follows. Yatsu elu bielu. So as I just tell you the beginning of this, and we'll have to stop. Yotzu elu elu. Remember, again, I will say, what we're talking about over here is as follows. The Mishnah told me that halacha lemaisa, once when the yotzu, that when there are four people carrying out the Parim HaNesrafim and the Sirim HaNesrafim. So the way the Mishnah seemed to phrase, I will say, is that halacha lemaisa, you only become tameh when you actually exit Yerushalayim. So therefore, even though the first two go out, when the last two are still inside the city, ultimately, again, they do not become Tamei. They do not become Tamei. Only Yatsu Elu V'Elu, it's only once they both are out that now all four become Tamei. So the Gemara just says over there here, Menahani Mili, where do we know that from? The Tanra Abanon, because I will say we learned, Lahalon, over there. Now I will say later on we're going to see, this is by the power of the Kohen Gadol. What does it say? So Lahalon Omer, Chutz Legimel Machanos, Kan Lamachana Achas. So we'll say, as we're going to see in tomorrow's daf, that the Gemara talks about by the power of the Kohen Gadol, says ultimately again that it has to be done outside of the three Machanos. Kan, yet again I will say over here, now by the way, it's not just the power of the Kohen Gadol, it's the power of the Kohen Gadol, Par Helam Davar Minat Sibor. So we'll say Kan, when the Gemara says Kan, it refers to the Seer and part of Yom Kippur. On the Machana Achas, it talks about being removed from one camp. Lomar Lacha, Kevan Sheyatza Chutz Lamachana Achas Matai Begadon. To teach you that once a carbon is taken out of one of the camps, ultimately, again, it's metami begadim. V'hi gufa minolam. Rabbi Ossi, we're trying to understand where does this halacha itself actually come from. So say, we'll stop over here for today. We'll pick up a Meretz Hashem tomorrow at the Tanur Rabbanon. And Rabbi Ossi, the idea, remember again, so we're leaving off kind of mid-sugya, trying to figure out, where do we learn this concept? I understand if you tell me that once you're involved in the carbon, the actual avoda, that my clothing becomes tummy. Where do we learn the concept that what? That halacha lemaisa, taking it out of the machanos, actually conveys tumma to the clothing. We'll see, to be continued tomorrow. I'll record the parsha and post the parsha thought in Mir Hashem after that. Shkoyach.